Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for a very unique artist, Alexis Frazier. Alexis, welcome.
Thank you.
I don't want to give away too much about what you do. So normally I would say you're a do of this and that, but we're going to leave a little bit of mystery for a second here.
Okay.
Normally I want to press rewind and start back to where art comes into your life, and I definitely want to do that. Mm-hmm. But you're the first guest that has provided me this unique opportunity, so I am not going to let it go.
Okay.
What was it like to find out you were a clue on Jeopardy?
You saw.
I did. And I am a Jeopardy guy. And I was like, oh my God, that's like the coolest damn thing in the whole world. I have to ask her what that was like.
I'm still kind of on a high a little bit from, I'm not going to lie, because this was just last Thursday. My husband and I were out just bowling, having a casual date night. And my phone started pinging and people were like, Lex, you're on Jeopardy. And I said, no, I wasn't on Jeopardy. I've done other game shows before, actually. So like I have like this little game show streak. It's kind of a fun fact about me. But I wasn't on Jeopardy. They said, no, your name is being used as a clue on Jeopardy. I'm like, what? And to me, that was sort of like, okay, if my name is being used as a clue, have I arrived? I don't know, but this
it's
is like
some
this
sort
is,
of arrival
this is
for sure.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, truly, like, genuinely cool and awesome. I don't even know how it happened. Total surprise.
So, have you had like a bunch of people? Has there been like some kind of ripple from that stone being thrown already?
Well, I definitely garnered, it's funny because like people that I hadn't spoken to like since high school, like reached out, you know, and like, so I feel like some people have reached out, and I think people are just genuinely excited to have seen that. And just, you know, when you know somebody and you see their name,
cool.
Right? Yeah. Actually some people have turned up and said, you know, hey, I work for various cosmetic companies, you know, let's chat, you know, so there are some irons in the fire right now as far as, you know, new potential work. I think that just, listen, I keep saying like it was the coolest experience, but also like the best free publicity I've ever had.
Yeah. Right.
So I feel like, you know, if this is a catalyst to new opportunities, hey, I am here for it.
That you got to that point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, very cool.
Okay. Well, that is too fun. thank you for indulging me on the
what was that like?
Because that had to be too cool. I mean, I don't even know. I'd feel like time stopped if that was me.
Oh my gosh.
I mean?
Total cool. Totally cool. But it was a little easy to get a little, I don't know. I was in my phone a lot the next day just because there was a lot
of course.
I have to put the phone down, get back to reality, you know, but that was my reality for a minute and it was pretty awesome. So
too fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we're going to press rewind like we normally do.
Okay.
And we'll build up to what your medium is, though. I think the cosmetics company part that's everybody's little clue. Who they don't know. So take me back to where art comes into your life, because I know you got creativity just running in you. So, so take me back to where this starts to be something that you identify with.
Okay. So I'm an artist. That's my full-time gig. I've been doing it professionally now for 12 years. I've been an artist, a creative my whole life. I always knew that I wanted to do something in the creative realm, to be an artist for a living. However, I was definitely, you know, guided by my guidance counselors and by elders, you know, trying to tell me, you know, an artist, that's, you know, not really the best choice. You know, what about graphic designer or interior design or, you know, just anything else that was in the design realm. But the idea of just being an artist wasn't something I was guided to do. So I actually went to school for art education, and I went to school to become a secondary art teacher so I could teach high school level art. And it actually, my college life was kind of a prolonged one. It was about 9 years until I finally graduated. And I think it's ultimately because I was just trying to find my passion along the way, you know?
Ah.
And my husband, who he's Canadian, he was offered a job in Toronto probably the week after I finally received my certification to become a secondary art teacher. So we moved to Toronto. I am not a citizen, therefore I could not legally work. So we moved to Toronto, and I was a nanny making some cash under the table. And then I was doing my art just to kind of pass the time. Otherwise, in this little studio that we had in our little brownstone apartment downtown. And so I started painting a lot. My artwork was all over the place. It was all kinds of mediums, all kinds of styles. It truly was me just figuring out not even trying to, I didn't even know what I was figuring out. I was just painting because I liked doing it. You know?
That was going to be my question. What the impetus was, it's just you had the time on your hands and the gravity drew you towards, I'll create. That's what I do.
Yep. And usually it would stem from like, I would see a cool, I love photography. So if I would see a really cool photograph online, I would just try to paint it because I really loved hyper-realism. I loved painting people and portraits. So I started painting and I would post onto Facebook. So this was, Instagram like wasn't even a thing yet. And people, I would post my creations and slowly people start saying, hey, is that for sale? Or if I give you a picture of, you know, my daughter or my cat, could you paint, you know, him or her? And so then I realized, wait, people want to exchange their money for my artwork. Isn't this what the world told me I couldn't do? Okay, well, let's just try to ride this train a little bit. So over the course of time, I just continued to paint, but I realized after a while, I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. I feel like I'm starting to become an artist and this is how I'm bringing in extra money because otherwise I wasn't making much money pulling my weight essentially, right?
Right.
And, but I realized after a while that when I started trying to enter into art shows, my art was all over the place. Like this looked like an ADD artist with a portfolio that looked like it came from like 25 different artists. So it was about me trying to narrow down my niche. What is it that I love to paint? What do I like to work with? And I think that was part of the discovery of me finding myself as an artist was kind of like, you know, you're a musician, you know, finding your voice, your music, your style, right? And it's good to evolve and to dabble, but essentially like to be able to get people's attention, you kind of have to find a niche, a thing.
I was going
to
say, there is always that.
What's your thing?
The dichotomy of being able to have artistic freedom, but picking a lane so someone can find you.
Exactly. Exactly. And at the time I was, while I was doing all of this artwork, one type of art that always intrigued me was unconventional art. I loved art that I would see like, you know, an artist would find, you know, recycled bottles on the side of a road and like craft some sculpture out of it. I always thought that was like the coolest type of art was anything that was unconventional. So I started dabbling in unconventional art and I would always try. It was like a challenge I made for myself where I would pick a medium and I would try to make that correlate with my subject. So Kate Middleton was really popular at the time. So, and she was British. So I chose to paint her out of tea. And same with Princess Diana, you know, or this is a really like kind of weird one, but, my dog was my baby at the time. So she was a boxer and I did a portrait out of her kibble.
Nice.
And like, you know, just like things like that, just quirky little, I did a painting for a brewery out of beer. I actually even went as far as if you really want to dig deep into the YouTube hole, there's even pictures of me doing like Gene Kelly singing in the rain where I'm painting with my feet, like dancing on a canvas. So like I did a lot of crazy stuff, but I was really also trying to, I guess in a way, like it all kind of seemed a little gimmicky, but trying to like get people to notice me and my art. Because I felt like before I wasn't like, I think I wanted this next level of excellence or this next level of like, how am I going to get people to stop and notice? And anyway, so I was in a pop art as well. And I just had this thought on the way. It was a road trip from Canada to Florida, actually.
That's a heck of a road trip.
Yeah, it was. And I had this light bulb moment. I was like, what if I painted Marilyn Monroe and I painted her out of lipstick? And I didn't just stop there. I was like,
just out of nowhere, that thought.
It was true. Because I was always thinking, okay, well, you know, who can I paint next? And how can I make this? You know, so I was always thinking and writing down ideas. And this idea just popped into my head. Like, okay, because I was doing a lot of pop icons and she was just such a, you know, traditional pop icon that you see in art all the time. And I liked painting her. And I was just thinking, how can I paint her in an unconventional way that'll get people to stop and notice? And I thought of painting her in lipstick. So I was talking to my husband and he's like, that's actually a really cool idea. I love that. It's so feminine and it's so like, I don't know, there's something sassy about it. And I just feel like that's really her. And then, you know, I didn't stop there. I said, but what if I didn't just use lipstick? Like, what if I like painted her with my kiss prints? Because she was so famously known for blowing her kisses and she was a sex symbol and all of that. So he's like, so you're like, you want to like kiss the canvas over and over again to like create this portrait of Marilyn? I said, I think so. I think that'd be really cool. And we should post it onto YouTube. And he was like, all right, let's do it when we get back home. So we went back home and I unrolled this huge canvas. It was about 5 feet by 7 feet, I would say. And we plastered it on our dining room wall. And I bought all of the cheapest lipstick that I could garner at Walgreens or whatever drugstore I could. And I just started creating this portrait of her out of lipstick and my actual physical kiss prints. And he filmed the whole thing. Again, if you want to dive really deep on into YouTube, you can find it's a very cringy video. But it's the first thing that I ever did that like got a really big response. So there were people that were like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then there were people like, this isn't real art. This is just a gimmick. So it was sort of like you're getting like, you're ruffling people's feathers too a little bit with it, right? Anyway, that's where the seed of painting with cosmetics started. So from there, it was an evolution. I started painting with lipstick and really started to hone in on the what it meant to paint with lipstick. So I was doing a lot of female portraiture, a lot of female pop icons. You know, I pulled in the idea because I was using my kiss prints a lot. So I pulled in the idea of like, you know, spreading love and just positivity and beauty. So then, you know, eventually my name is Alexis. Everyone calls me Lex for short. It's not the most clever name, but Lipstick Lex just.
I was going to say it rolls.
It rolls. People don't forget it. And it just stuck ever since then. So that's what I'm known for is painting with lipstick. And now it's unraveled into all cosmetics. So I don't just stop at lipstick. And I also don't hinder myself from painting with traditional materials either, because there was a while where I was like, exclusively lipstick, but it was also very limiting.
Yeah, right. Well, the pendulum's always got to swing a little bit in the artistic journey.
Yeah, exactly.
So it seems like one of the reoccurring themes in your journey here is hitting points where you need to narrow things down, whether or not it's a 9-year school journey or just being in this apartment and making all these different types of art and trying to get to the point where finding what resonates with you is something you can really go on. And or opening your mind to the point where the Marilyn Monroe thing comes.
Sure.
Talk to me a little bit about what it feels like when you're in the middle of that river.
Like in the middle of like that. Like
when you don't know what you're going to do and you don't have a direct path and you're in year 4.5 and you don't even know that there's another 4.5 in front of you. Thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this time to talk to our sponsor for this week, Tony Barrett from Barrett Realty.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate you having us on the show. Barrett Realty has been in business for 20 years, and we are a boutique real estate company. And I look forward to servicing our community with people that want to buy and sell property. I think it's very important that we're out there advocating for personal property rights. And we want to be the people that you select when it comes to buying and selling homes. So please, if you're interested in buying or selling homes in Manatee, Sarasota, or surrounding counties, reach out to us at Barrett Realty at 941-745-9999 or brmovesyou.com.
Again, we'd like to send a big thanks out to Tony Barrett, Barrett Realty, for sponsoring this episode and being an awesome part of this community. Please enjoy the rest.
I hate it. I hate it. Like, it's not a good... Honestly, I've had so much self-doubt in my... So many times where I'm like, what am I doing? This is stupid. How am I going to keep doing this? Come on. You know, like, it's really hard, honestly, to get through because there's no direct roadmap. And, like, where I want to go in my art journey and my art career is something big. And so I feel like there's not really been a painted roadmap for what that looks like. It's kind of like I'm genuinely figuring it out as I go, and my evolution and the steps that I take. It's sort of like I have to allow the ebbs and the flows, right? Because there's going to be times where, you know, I have this inspiration, or there might be an opportunity or a collaboration, and it gives me something to work for and work towards. And then, like, I'll hit a dry spell, and I just, it's like writer's block, right? I have no idea what to paint. I have no motivation or inspiration. And sometimes I just have to allow myself to sit in that nothingness for a little while to be able to have something reignite. And it will come out of the blue. So it could be, you know, a song that I hear. It could be an image, you know, that I, something that could be trending. I don't know. It could just, anything could ignite it. But it's just kind of like allowing those ebbs and flows to occur, I guess, because it's not a good feeling. And I just have to trust the process. Just like my paintings, when I start a painting, I'm having fun. And then I get about like halfway in there and I think, this is garbage. And then you just have to keep pushing and going through. And then you're like, okay, I think I got this. And then towards the end, it's like, all right, this is awesome. So it's almost like trusting the process of a painting coming from start to finish. It's the same thing with my journey.
How long did it take you to recognize that that's what you needed to do? When you were in college, did you feel like you were adrift, or were you conscious of the fact you're like, hey, the ebb and flow is what I need to learn to ride here, and this is just part of it. If it takes 9 years, it takes 9 years.
No, that's definitely, I think, come with just time and age and maturity. And because I think in my past, I definitely was very much adrift and I didn't know where I was going at all. And I think things took me longer than they do now. But I'm also just like, I'm kind of a hustler heart and at mind now, and I wasn't like that then. I sort of I don't know, so I think that I've just probably realized it, I guess. I would say probably it was actually kind of coming out of COVID, so out of 2020. So that was when I jumped from like 0 to 60 essentially, because I was riding nice and slow and steady, and I actually opened up my first brick and mortar art gallery, and this was right before COVID happened.
What was, and I don't mean to sidetrack, but what was the gap of time between the Marilyn Monroe portrait to that?
Okay. Oh gosh, that would have been, okay, so Marilyn Monroe portrait, that very first thing was in, 2012.
Okay, so there was a road in between there.
Oh yeah, so 2012, and then we didn't move to Sarasota until 2017. So I was like dabbling, slowly evolving, dabbling. I was also having my two babies and being a mom and all that stuff. So things were definitely slow. I did not have, you know, a hustler kind of mentality. It was just more or less me, you know, kind of riding the wave, but really very unclear and certain. I didn't know that even lipstick is the route I was going to go. Because even when I started doing the lipstick journey, I was still, I actually had two accounts for everything. So I had a Facebook and an Instagram for, you know, Alexis Fraser Art. And then I started one for Lipstick Lex, because I couldn't choose. I didn't know what path I was going to take.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So at first there was a little dichotomy between the two.
Yes. And when we moved to Sarasota in 2017, that's when I took the Lipstick Lex. I'm like, all right, I'm not even using the other social media anymore. I'm going full in. I'm going to do this thing. And when I really took the leap and decided this is what I was going to do, really cool shit started happening. So I started getting opportunities from cosmetic companies for partnerships. I was flown to Tokyo and Europe for different, you know, exhibitions and live art performances and things like that. So people started noticing. So I think I was kind of like riding this wave of like, oh yeah, you know, I'm doing great. The next best thing is I should probably have my own gallery. It seems like the bright and shiny thing to do. Mm. And so I leapt into it a little bit too quickly. And actually it's where Project Coffee is in the Rosemary District. That was my art gallery. So this was huge space. It was like over 2,500 square feet.
Right.
And it was going to be used as not just a place for me to make and create and display my artwork, but we were going to use it as a venue. And then when all events shut down, that business plan kind of like went out the window. But so we gave it a good, year and a half in that space. And after that, I had to do a lot of self-reflection after that, because business wasn't the same as it wasn't for everybody. Had to pivot, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So I would say, like, that's kind of about the time that I really had to take a step back. And is that kind of, I'm trying to retrace what your question was now.
No, but, we're filling in the gaps. No, because I'm just kind of curious how we get there. So I always wonder, when you have those moments, and for you, it sounds like when you first start to travel doing this and some of these things that you weren't expecting, not that you really are one to have a ton of expectations, but things you weren't expecting started to happen. Did that feel really surreal, or did it feel like you were putting on shoes that fit?
A little bit of both. I felt like there was a part of it that felt very... like, yes, this is what, this feels right. And then there's also like that imposter syndrome, you know, where it's like, why do I get to do this? Like, who am I to have this, you know, experience or to, so yes, a little bit. And I still struggle with that, because I think that, I don't know. I mean, I didn't really come from that, a type of background where I saw people really succeeding at things, I guess. And, I, you know, my parents both worked very, very hard, and, you know, always gave us, they gave us the best upbringing that they could. And I had a great childhood and all that, but I never was really like led by example as far as like what true success looks like. And, so I think it's sort of like this deeply rooted unconditioning that I've had to do to sort of like find that sense of worthiness behind like having and being granted awesome opportunities, but it's for awesome work that I'm doing.
That's a, maybe a modest Midwest DNA.
Oh, there it is. Yep.
Yeah.
There it is. Yeah.
I can relate to that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So when these things start to happen and you start to get recognized, you know, you mentioned the imposter syndrome thing. Do you think that some of that, and I find it interesting that you say that still happens to you now, because most people say that that's something they never shake. Do you think that that's something that's just rooted in the subjective nature of art, and whether once you have the gall to stick your neck out there and in this case literally kiss the canvas, you're putting yourself in the position where someone's going to tell you it's awesome and someone's going to tell you it's a gimmick? You said the gimmick word, and I want to cycle back to that, because I think a lot of people that want to try something outside the box, for lack of a better way of putting it, they face that kind of mental cognitive dissonance.
Totally. I'm afraid of looking stupid all the time. Like I there's been so many times where, and my husband's really, really polar opposite. He just doesn't give to you know what's about what people think about him. And so that's actually been useful to me, because he'll remind me like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Who cares what they, just do it. And he's always been encouraging of me to try these things and to do these things. And there's definitely that always going on in the back of my mind, but I am getting a lot better about it. And I'm very aware of when those thoughts start trying to seep in and get the better of me. And I'm really good at pushing them away now and just doing the thing. So it's, it's just in our human nature a little bit, you know, and I think it's this like fight or flight in a way, because it's just like we so bad. I think some of us just so badly want that acceptance, and we just want to be liked by everybody. And I grew up also wanting approval from my teachers, from my parents. Like I was always a goody goody, you know? And so I think that's a part of it too, is just like never wanting to ruffle anyone's feathers and not wanting to stir the pot and wanting to do, you know, what will make people proud. And, but at the end of the day, it's like, I'm not doing this for them. I'm doing it for me. And I'm also trying to set new examples for my kids. So
yeah, that's the realization when you find out there is no gold star.
Right.
After a while, you have to have your own, make your own, I suppose.
That's it. Yeah, make my old gold stars.
Okay, so you're coming out of the turbulence of COVID. This is pivot time for everybody, like you said. You've done the brick and mortar thing, which is a tall order no matter what the case.
Very tall.
So when you're starting to now again have to pivot, you're looking at a wide pantheon of options you can do. What's the narrowing down, or what is the spaghetti at the wall look like at that point?
So much spaghetti on the wall, so much sauce, actually. More sauce than spaghetti. So I took a step back. I decided to completely downsize, and I ended up just getting a small studio space that I was working out of, but no one even really knew I was there. I ultimately moved out of that space and just moved back into my home studio. So pretty much since, I would say, the end of 2021, I've been working out of my home studio, just humbly working out of my home. And I love every single thing about it. And it's actually opened up new opportunities. So, you know, over the handful of years, I've been not just working on building my portfolio and commission-based work, but I've been doing a lot of art workshops where I'm able to bring my art to the people. And so usually they're ladies' events, and we paint exclusively with lipstick. So, you know, Galentine's Day season, Mother's Day season, I'm always very booked. But so I've been doing a lot of art workshops, and that's just been good at helping me talk about what I do and introduce myself as an artist. I've also been doing a lot of live painting. So, you know, at various events or establishments, being able to paint in front of an audience and, again, talk about what I do, meet people, network. So just expanding beyond just being a hermit in my studio, I guess.
Yeah, which is too easy to do and sometimes too fun.
Yes, it is. It is indeed. But, you know, even just like showing up online for social media, it's like it means I have to like put on a real shirt that day. I mean, I don't have to, but I don't want to like totally look like a slob, yeah. You know, so it's like gives me a reason to show up a little bit better, I guess. And actually, up until just recently, we just launched my mobile art gallery. So this is something that's been brewing in the backs of our minds for a little while as far as another way to bring my art to the people. And after COVID, everything became about convenience and concierge, right?
Right.
And even though I feel like we're like long past that now, it was where the idea originally sparked, I guess, was this idea of, you know, getting mobile and how do I bring my art to the people. So it took a while for me to finally like bite the bullet and pull the trigger on this. But we just opened, my husband helped me build out. It was a brand new 16-foot trailer and we got it wrapped and all decked out inside. It's very vibey and has all my art. And for a long time, people have been wanting, you know, easy takeaway items, you know, like posters and prints and like a bespoke gift items, things like that. So just to make my art a little bit more accessible because, you know, art's a luxury item. So trying to bring it to the people.
Yeah. So how do you navigate that when you... Because I gather when you were in Toronto and starting to make these pieces, mm-hmm. it wasn't because you thought to yourself, oh, I'm going to start selling these and this will be my mm-hmm. my new thing. Because like you said, you weren't grind mindset or hustle Mm-mm. mindset at that point.
Mm-mm.
So talk to me a little bit about when that starts to creep into your artistic journey and how you start to walk the line between, just like you said, having things that are takeaway accessible for people, mm-hmm. but still doing the things that mm-hmm. maybe look like an ADD person did this.
Well, I feel like, you know, it's a difficult thing to navigate as an artist because, you know, even just finding my pricing, how to price a piece of artwork is a really challenging thing for an artist to do because we have to step outside of our own shoes, right? Because I think that there's something about like, oh, well, I made it like... Again, it comes back to that worthiness, right? And mm-hmm. your how much value you give to yourself and how much value you're willing to give to the artwork, right? And there's always, for a long time, this level of like excellence that I'm trying to get to. And for many, again, coming back to my husband too, he will always say, you price that too low. You price that too low. You're not giving yourself enough credit. Like, why? You know, and when you make your stuff just a little bit more out of reach, I guess, it just sort of helps elevate the idea of your work a little bit more. And also what I do is exceptionally rare. And so just reminding myself of that. But What was your question? I'm sorry.
really, it is that. Mm-hmm. What it's like when you have to start incorporating the real nuts and bolts of this is a commodity. I did put my heart and soul in this. I can't necessarily price this on what it took to make it.
Right.
It took me tapping into the ethos to make this, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and the years to like perfect the craft too, right? It's an unusual craft too, right? So it's like not just about, and one of my least favorite questions I'm asked is, well, how long did that take? It's like, it doesn't freaking matter how long it took. I'm actually very fast at painting now, but that shouldn't matter.
Well,
right?
it took me 45 years.
Yeah, exactly,
I mean?
Right?
Like, how long have I been here?
Yeah.
That is kind of a strange question, you know, but well, and that's one of the things. And actually, this was one of the questions I was going to wait to ask you at the end, but we're at a poignant point to ask it now. What is one of the things you would like to try to tell people about what it's like to be an artist? Because I think that question of how long did it take you to make this is because there is a fundamental divide between people who create things and people who see it and can enjoy it and have all those things, but they still have the thought of how long did it take to make it? You know, it's still that tangible thing.
And I get that. And I think that's a very, I understand the question. I understand where they're, I know
for
it's,
sure, for
and
sure.
It's just a friendly question. They're just genuinely curious. And I get that. What I don't like though, is when someone will equate that to the price tag. That's what I don't like. So, or, you know, if somebody, and I would say, generally speaking, most people don't. I think the people that reach out for like a commission piece, most people are pretty, actually very gracious to my pricing and all of that. But the odd time they'll be like, yeah, but how long will that take you to make? It shouldn't matter, right? I'm trying to like think of a good analogy or a good equivalent.
Time is a weird quantifier.
Like, yeah. So, you know, if you ask like a surgeon, you know, like, is he any less valuable if he does the surgery slower? You know, like, no, you want, you know, we're all about efficiency here, right?
So, we got to be effective.
Yes. Effective though. Yes. You don't want to rush through a surgery either. But anyway, I digress. So, where were we?
Well,
apologies.
One of the things about explaining kind of what it's like to be on the other side of the fence, and this was kind of the question. This is kind of the operative bit of it for me. You've said twice the excellence that you strive for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a whole thing to unpack unto itself.
Yeah.
But most people know or are familiar with artists can be their own worst critics.
Yeah.
It's a gift and a curse. Whatever. Even when you have an excellence that you want to pursue and you're willing to put forth the effort to pursue it, how do you quantify that? That's what's happening along the way. How do you be able to say to yourself at the end of the day, I'm getting closer to my excellence? What does it for you?
Well, every day I try to take small right actions in the right direction. So as long as like I have my goals, and as long as every day I'm doing at least one thing to get myself closer to that goal. And sometimes I have to reflect. I love, you know, how our phones will give us like flashbacks of what you did a year ago. I love when things like that happen, when those pop up, because sometimes you don't realize the strides you're making because you're in your own life, right? And to you, it's just another day. You're trying to get through another day. But the compound effect of taking those small right actions every single day do lead to monumental moves. And so I think it's a matter of just constantly doing something to work towards. Some days I've got so much fire in my belly and gusto, it's like I get so much accomplished. And there's some days where I don't feel that way, but I'll do something. Even if it's, you know, responding to those emails that I've been meaning to get back to, or maybe it's reaching out to somebody on LinkedIn that I've been meaning to connect with, you know, for a potential opportunity. It takes 5 minutes of my time, you know. So just constantly working towards that to be able to see that progress is being made, because it is hard sometimes to see when you're sitting in your own seat, you know,
right,
what you've done. And other people will remind you too. Oh my gosh, but you know, because in another person's eyes, they've seen, it's like seeing like a child growing up, right? So it's like when it's your child, you don't realize how much they've grown. But when, you know, the grandparents or whatever haven't seen them, you know, in 6 months, they see the progress, right? And they see the growth, right? And so people other people are really good at reminding me of that too. But yeah, just to be an artist and to be one that wants to excel at what you do, it's really a matter of like staying in that creative brain, but also having the, you got to have the motivation to just keep going and keep trying and keep evolving. I don't know. It's,
so when you go to make new pieces mm-hmm. now, do you reflect on where you've come, or do you take everything as this is a new piece? I don't reference my old work.
I think everything kind of stems from the last one, to be honest. It's always like, it's like a ripple effect, I would say. So unless I'm really trying to just change it up, you know, entirely, I feel like if you look at my work, it's such an interesting progression, and you can see the progression. You can see how, like, just if you look at, and it's just the style of the artwork, right? You can see where it started and how it's evolved in style and color and technique. And I feel like it's all being, like it's like a chain effect, right? It's all kind of, like, chained and linked to the next one. And every once in a while, I'll like to throw, I guess, myself and people through a loop and try out something completely new and different. And that might help stir up something new. But otherwise, it seems to just sort of be like this chain reaction, I guess, if that answers your question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do you see, like, I guess, once you're conscious of that fact, do you see where you're at? And do you think to yourself, okay, I see what bits of this I'm going to take with me. I see what link in the chain I am right now. Or is this always a hindsight's 2020 thing?
Interesting. Well, I think that sometimes... sometimes I have an idea of what, you know, what something, what I might want to bring to the table, but maybe it didn't exactly give me the results that I wanted, whether that was creatively or, you know, I definitely get like, I hate, my husband's always telling me, don't worry about what people think, but when people really like something that I've done, it's hard not to ride on those coattails a little bit and keep kind of following that trail and that path a little bit, because while I am an artist, I'm a creative, and yes, the right thing for me to say out loud is like, I'm doing it all for myself and for my soul, but I am a business person as well. And I want to do what lights people up and what brings them joy. And so, you know, when I start to discover what that is, it's like, I want to keep producing more and more of that.
Well, I think you kind of said the two magic words kind of back to back with one another, business and joy. Though that's kind of what I was asking a bit about before, and I kind of want to touch on that again. How do you navigate that? Because you said, I'm an artist and, you know, all this, but I'm also a business person too. What was it like at the moment when you had to accept that? Because I think really what I was asking before, that's the operative bit, because for every artist to sustain and continue to create and provide things that will bring people joy, you have to do some business.
Yes, you do. And that's always been the weak link for me, is the business side of things. I didn't go to school for business. I did not grow up with business-minded parents. Everything that I've learned, I am an audiobook, podcast, seminar junkie. I have learned everything from the internet and I'm still learning all the time, you know? And I think that, I don't know if you're familiar with her, Sophia Amoruso. She's like this, I don't know how it even like ended up on my audio. Oh, I know what it was. So she had this Netflix special. So she came up with the brand. It's called Nasty Gal. And anyway, it's like this clothing. It all started with her like selling vintage clothes on eBay. Anyway, she had this Netflix special coming out about like her story. And for some reason, I caught this like Netflix thing. And I'm like, who is this woman? I kind of want to know more about her. Well, turns out she had an audiobook. It was the first audiobook that I had listened to. And that very first audiobook that I had listened to was this Business Meets Joy, essentially, because this was her passion, right? Where she was taking these vintage clothes and she was turning them around and making money and turned it into this huge billion-dollar brand. And so I wanted to know more about her. And I'm like, oh, like this whole like entrepreneurial journey of somebody who's like so unassuming is kind of interesting. So that's where that, I guess, mindset started. And like, I wanted to read more books like that and learn more about that. And I think that's where like that hustle side, the business side started to kick in for me a little bit, where I started to see myself as not just an artist that, you know, like to make some money on the side, but how do I turn this into a business? How do I make this a brand? How do I market myself? You know, all of these questions that I was certainly not asking myself before. So sometimes it's just, you got to just be struck by some inspiration and then it's a ripple effect from there. But
so did you find that her story or something about her story felt like it gave you permission to say, I can do this?
Yeah, definitely. Because she was a lot like me, just not a good student in school. I don't think she didn't really see her. When I was in school, I was a horrible student also. And I think the only thing I ever really thought that I was good at was my art. And that was like, if I was doing something creative in school, then that's where I was thriving and excelling.
So what kind of irony was it giving you wanting to become a secondary art teacher, knowing that?
I know, isn't that funny? I don't know. I think because I just thought that that was like the safe choice, because I never really loved school.
Yeah.
I did love my art teachers though. And they made an impression on me, and they made me feel like I was they made me feel confident that I could do something.
Right.
And maybe there was it's interesting that you met. I've never even actually thought of that until you just mentioned that to me. But yeah, maybe there was a small part of me that was just like wanted to be able to provide and give that back to another young kid too. But yeah, I think that reading and hearing her story of somebody who was otherwise kind of unassuming, but just had this like funny little passion that she did on the side. And it was sort of a similar scenario where, you know, she just posted something and people like, ping, how much is that? Sort of like when I posted my first painting on Facebook, ping, how much is that? It's like, oh,
you know. Is that what it felt like to you? Did it feel like just this funny thing you did on the side?
Well, at first it was. It was just me, like I was making artwork to kind of pass the time.
No, and I understand that. I don't mean to cut, but lots of people do their funny thing on the side and they think that they're like really making the Michelangelo over here.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Did you have any sense of taking, I don't want to put it this way, but for want of no other way of putting it, did you have any sense of taking your art seriously or taking it seriously? Or were those types of pings and things what started to awaken taking it seriously?
I would say, you know, yes, I think that when I would make a piece, I would always imagine like, I did imagine great things. I would imagine like, okay, this is a funny example. Do you know the movie Christmas Story?
Mm-hmm.
You know how like Ralphie is imagining his teacher like giving him an A++, right?
Plus, yes.
Like my imagination would think like, this is like his thesis or whatever it was that he had to write.
The wish list for the Red Ryder BB gun.
Yes, right?
And this like, compass and this thing which tells time.
The thing that tells time. Yeah. Poetry, right? Yeah, like, yes. I think there's this part of my brain that was delusional enough that thought what I was making was just so great and people would find it. And I guess, I don't know, that silly imagination did something.
Well, that's imparting the passion into it. I believe that carries. That's my own personal thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So then once you start to take it seriously and you're like, oh my God, I can sell these things. And you start to have somewhat of a template of a hustle that you can do and feel, I don't know, morally cool with it, or that it's not going to corrupt your art so much. This goes on for a period of time before you do the brick and mortar thing. Yeah.
Yes, it did. Yeah, it went on for a period of time. So we moved here in 2017. I had just had my son. I was working out of my little at-home studio, and because it was between that time and 2020 that the cool stuff started happening. So, and it wasn't just the exhibitions, you know, here, there, and all around, and, you know, these cool opportunities, but it was just like, I was invited to be like a guest on TV shows and things like that. And I think it was all of that. Like, I don't know if it went to, maybe it went to my head a little bit, honestly, because I thought that I'm like, all right, I think I'm on the rise, you know, but it was between that and 2020 when I opened the gallery that I think I felt like this was the next thing I'm supposed to do, right? It felt like, I don't know, the bright, shiny thing. And I wanted to have that, I think, to maybe help prove to myself that it was all worthy and worth it. And while the brick and mortar wasn't successful financially the way that I was hoping, it absolutely, absolutely put me on the map in this town, though. And I think it got people here locally to pay attention and to start noticing my artwork. It helped me. I gained so many new friendships because of it and new clients because of it. And so it was definitely a part of my story that needed to happen. Even though it was like the most depressing thing when I had to throw in the towel and let it go, it's okay because it happened for a brief period of time when it was meant to. And then it gave me time to kind of like pull back the reins a little bit, reassess myself, my own journey, my artwork. And, you know, right now the way that I'm creating too is so much more in alignment than how I was creating back then. So when I was creating back then, we're going to go back to the kiss prints really quick. I was telling you that I used to kiss on the canvas, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was like solely kissing the canvas. So if you go back to my artwork, it was like kiss print pointillism, if you know what pointillism is.
I don't.
Okay, you know when artwork is made with like a bunch of dots?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Think of that, but kiss prints.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so like my face was over it, if you can imagine.
Yeah, I can.
Yes.
I was actually wondering that before.
Mm-hmm. It was very laborious. It was so laborious. And I got to a point where I was like resentful of my work a little bit. And I feel like I got so trapped in this, I'm going to use the word gimmick again, I kept doing it because this is what the people wanted.
I was going to say it became an expectation.
Mm-hmm. Or I thought that it became an expectation, or I thought this is what people wanted. So I just kept doing it. And it would get to the point where if somebody would commission something, I'd be dreading it. It's like, okay, I took the joy out of my work, right?
Yes.
And that was another reason I'm actually glad that the gallery didn't work out, because it made me stop, reassess. My husband, once again, coming to my rescue, he's like, Lex, you write your own rules. Why? You don't have to do this. And if people are really that upset, they'll go and the new ones will come. And the ones that are always going to be your cheerleader are going to be there no matter what. And he's like, and plus you should be paying people, if they want your kiss prints, they should pay a premium for that. And I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, but the kiss print is still the symbol and it's the signature on every piece that I create. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
But
wild.
Well, that's one of those things, I guess it's important to, and I hate to use the F word, failure.
Mm.
But in hindsight, did you feel when you were having to part company with the brick and mortar dream? Mm-hmm. How long did it take you? Because I can't imagine you didn't have failure feeling.
Oh, for sure.
Having been through that myself, I can relate there.
Mm-hmm.
What was the little space like in between until you started to be able to see this as the gift you can describe it now, when you can say this failure mm-hmm. actually provided me the space to learn what turned out to be a really valuable lesson in yeah. this case that I'm not going to kiss these myself silly,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Oh gosh. You know, longer than I want to say, I want to say, honestly, I was in a funk for a little while. I was still showing up. I was still showing face. I was still on social media. I was still producing artwork. But it took me a while to kind of come down from the brick and mortar. And it took a while for me to come down from the expectation of needing to put my physical kiss print into everything that I did. So I would say it probably was a good at least 2 years for me to kind of pull back. And as I started to pull back, I started to weave in new ways of creating. I started to, actually, my brother-in-law, he had hired me to do this custom piece for him and his wife. They live in Chicago. And they really just wanted an oil painting. I hadn't touched oil paints since, like, I was fresh out of art school, I guess. I mean, it had been a long time since I had used, because I had been using lipstick for so long. And he's like, can you do it with oil paint? And at first it was just part of me that was just like, he doesn't respect the lipstick, I guess. But, yeah. But
fine, you don't want me to kiss it, I won't.
But he got me working with oils again, and the oil paints were like heaven to work with. And I'm like, why am I not working with oil paint? And so I started to weave in traditional materials with the unconventional. So, you know, right now my artwork is mixed media, I call it. So it is oil, it's acrylic, it's lipstick, it's other cosmetics as well. So it's just, and it's sort of like, I like having the cosmetics still in there though, because it's still like that feminine touch. It's still the roots of like where Lipstick Lex came from. And it's a conversation piece, you know, for the artwork as well.
And at some point, I guess it's a little bit of a happy medium of meeting some people who expect to see that, but mm-hmm. yet being able to.
Yeah, exactly. And it still sets it apart and it makes it a little bit different and an element of intrigue. It's like, oh, is that oil paint or do you think she did that with lipstick? You know, you don't really know. So, you know, I think that I think my stuff definitely stood out more when I was 100% lipstick and I was doing the kisses. Like, let me tell you, that stuff, like, that got hits, you know, on social media, but my joy levels were down.
Well, if you stood on your head and painted with your toes, the same thing would happen. Mm-hmm. So did that keep you up at night, or were you just like, hey, I found my thing, this is it? Or really it's now having found the happy medium that is the coup de grace of this.
Yeah. I mean, finding the happy medium, I think has definitely, I can tell that I'm back into my joy again because my work is better. My production is better. The opportunities coming in are better, you know, and I think that when you're not authentic in what you're doing, like it just, people sense it or something. I don't know. And
it comes across somehow.
It comes across and it shows through my work. Exactly.
Yeah. So that was actually going to lead me to the question I wanted to ask you. Now mm-hmm. that you've gotten to the point where you've had a pretty good smattering of artistic journey from, I think I'm going to be a teacher to now I've got the happy medium mm-hmm. between cosmetics and normal painting and things. Mm-hmm. At what point do you say to yourself, like, I'm here now. I don't have any expectation to meet.
Mm. It's like really being in the present, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you, because you've got so much to draw on now, it'd be so easy to say, oh, if I do this or if I do that, but when I do that, how have you now been able to give yourself the creative freedom, mm-hmm. you know, to get from the one oil painting to getting this mixed medium thing where you found the happy medium?
Well, I think that it's, you know, how I was talking about like that chain effect, right? So I feel like that oil painting that I was commissioned to do, even though that was 100% oil paint, you know, it started to trickle its way back into my other work that I was creating. And through evolution, you know, it's sort of like, I don't know, a songwriter or a musician, right? You know, no album is exactly the same one to the next, right? I think we're all meant to evolve. And like right now, I feel like I'm at a good point, but I don't know if it's going to stay this way, you know, a year from now. I might be, who knows how I'll be creating a year from now. I don't really want to like hold myself to any particular set standard, I guess, because I think there's always room to continue to grow and evolve and
right.
In that creative nature.
Yeah. And then this takes me to the operative bit. There's always room to grow and evolve, but it seems like those things you have to be, and I don't mean this in the state of like a comfort zone, mm-hmm. but you have to be able to create comfortably to spread your wings a little bit.
Yeah.
So now that you've had all this time to draw on, what do you think are the things that help have you be in a comfortable space to create? Looking back on it, what are your best times of creation?
I feel like my best times of creation are the times where I'm actually going outside of my comfort zone a little bit. So I've always had this level of comfort, and I'm pretty much, I would say, in the scope of that on every piece that I create. But I would say almost all of my pieces, there's going to be some element of something a little bit different or new taking me out of that comfort zone. And when I achieve it, there's a great sense of like, I don't know, thrill, I guess, to that. And so I think that, yes, staying in that comfort zone is good and comfortable, and I know I'm good at it, but I definitely get on another level of joy or excitement, thrill when I'm able to introduce something that's maybe slightly different or new or a different technique, or I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm more kind of wondering what what are the things you can do in your creative process that helps you be in the place to be able to explore and incorporate and find new
that
pieces
helps
of the map?
To be able to? Yeah. I think it's just a matter of just making myself do it.
Sometimes, and that's just it, you know, I'm curious if that's just it, because people will say the same thing you had mentioned before, writer's block or creative dry spells or whatever. If just making yourself do it is how you get to the point where you
so
can
you're kind of talking about more like how, like finding the inspiration, I guess, or like get the fire going a little.
Well, finding the comfortability to do something that might suck.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely just starting. It's just doing it. Honestly, for me, I guess it's to do something that might, there's actually when I started doing murals, I felt that way because I didn't do murals and I wanted to expand into that realm and I was scared shitless.
You're talking full wall
murals. Now this is not done with cosmetics, just so you know.
Yeah,
this is like
that was
real
my next
pain,
question.
Real
are you
pain.
Using spray paint or how you, because cosmetics, you're going to be there for a year or two, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I can't promise the longevity of it either on an exterior wall. But I feel like that is a good example of me entering a realm of the unknown. I've never done it before, but it's a realm that I want to get into. I think I could be really good at it, but it also could really suck.
A++.
Yeah, exactly. But then that part of my delusional brain comes in, and I think there is this part of my brain where it's just like, I definitely have those feelings of doubt, but I also have that delusional side too, which just sees me being so great at it and being so proud of myself for it. And so it's just trusting it's just starting. I don't know. It's just like, I just do it and then
being
figure
able
it
to
out.
Latch on to excitement along the way.
Yeah. Because, even though there's lots of like screaming doubt, like, oh my God, this is horrible.
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say, because the two are going to coincide.
Yeah.
So maybe some of the answer to that question is making sure you can stay focused on the exciting part. And once you get off the blocks, follow those breadcrumbs.
I guess that's what it would be. Yeah. Because, I don't think there's ever been a project that I've started that I haven't finished.
Really?
I don't think so. Mm-mm. No, I don't think so. I think like I just finish it. I finish it, and it might not like be my favorite always when I'm done, but I've never like started something and then just like thrown paint at it and just given up. Like I always, and actually not that I can recall at least, I feel like that process is something that I honor very, very much. And I know every piece that I do. And this is something I always tell people when I do my art workshops. People are like, oh, it sucks. It sucks. I'm like, trust the process. You have to just don't. And you see people just give up. Just give up. But the thing is when you give up, you don't know that you could have. I think there's this element of like, but if I just pushed a little bit further, if I just went a little bit more, could I have actually like overcome that annoying little hurdle, you know? And it's problem solving along the way. And it's just kind of, trusting the process, I guess. But, so I think that it just kind of carries me through and it keeps proving to myself that I can do more than I thought I could initially. And it brings out new methods and ways of painting that I didn't see myself doing before. And
So would you say you enjoy the walk more than the destination?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, the walk is hard.
But it seems like you like the hard.
I do like the hard. Wow, that's a very good question to ask. The destination is what I'm always going for, but I don't know if my goalposts are always going to keep moving either.
Well.
You know?
Sounds like you already baked that one in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I do like the walk a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, what that destination's going to really be, you know? And when I get there, it probably, like I said, I'll probably move the goalposts and have another destination of mine. I don't know if
plateaus
I'll stop.
Are the worst place to be.
I don't know if
be.
I'll stop walking. Yeah, I guess I do enjoy the walk, even though it's, like, it's a mind, you know what?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you mentioned that you've never had a piece that you haven't finished, and that from a musical world, that's like totally anomalous. So this just begs my one oddball question, and then we can get you out of here on something a little more fun. Have you ever had a piece that you finished and then immediately threw away?
Mm, I've had a piece that I finish and then I paint over it.
Yeah.
Like I'll start, like I'll just, like it, I'll declare it as done. And if it sits around for too long and no one buys it and I still don't care for it, then I'll paint over it.
Okay. That's, well then that begs question part two.
Okay.
How do you know when one of your pieces is done when it's not a piece that has it like a portrait or an obvious finite when it's done? The stuff that you just set out on the expansive road, how do you decide done?
It's so weird. People, I don't really know how to even like describe it because I've been asked this question before. And I think it's just, it's like, I don't know. It's like, I'm going to do another movie reference. You know, like when Forrest Gump just decides he's just done running.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's just like, it's not screaming at me to keep going anymore. And I just look at it and I'm satisfied.
So it's Sign being it in off. Tune to it.
Yeah, I think so. I think nothing left is really screaming at me to keep going. And so I just decide to sign it and be done.
Have you ever looked back? I mean, it's hard for me not to liken it to music. I mean, I've looked back at records I've done or things I've been a part of, and it's like, oh, we should have done X, Y. The kick drum should have been louder. Do you do that to your stuff? Do you look back to your stuff and say, oh, my kick drum, so to speak, should have been louder, and then next time we're...
I will do that. I will do that. So I'll declare a piece is done, and then let's say I sign it and I seal it and I deliver it. And then let's say I'm like sitting in that person's living room later and I'm like analyzing. It's like, I'll never say things out loud, but like I see something that I could have adjusted that. I could have spent maybe more time on that area or whatever. Yes, 1,000%.
Well, that's lining up to enjoy the walk even more.
Yeah, yeah, true, true.
Very cool. Well, we're going to get you out here on something fun, something easy.
Okay.
I'm not going to wait for you to move the goalposts. I'm sure your goalposts are already moving.
Yeah.
What is the golden carrot piece if you could make it right now? Is it a big mural? Is it like the ultimate lipstick piece to end them all? One lipstick to rule them all? What's your magical piece if you could create it now or start working on it now?
Well, I'm working on it right now, actually.
Oh, great. Even better.
I'm working on it right now. I'm not saying this is going to be the end all be all and then I'm retiring, but should I say what it is, I guess?
It's entirely up to you.
Well, I guess that's might as well because I'm going to be posting it. So right now I am working on a portrait of Drew Barrymore with her entire cosmetic line.
Oh, cool.
I really want my art to be in front of her. I really feel like there's a lot of synergy. I don't know her personally, obviously, but I would love nothing more than her endorsement. And I feel that I could be wrong, but I feel that an endorsement from someone like her could really take my work to the next level, get my work in front of maybe a more elite demographic, a crowd, different parts of the world. I don't know.
So a broader map at any rate.
Exactly.
At any rate.
And it's important to me that, you know, when I decide to do pop icons and portraits, I like to do people that like I align with in some, you know, way. It's not just about creating somebody because they're a celebrity. But those celebrity, you know, feelers that they can put out there are not a bad thing either. So right now that's a goal that I'm working on. I've been saying for many years, I'm going to meet her one day. She and I are going to be such good friends. I'm going to meet her one day. But we'll see. So that's a little goal I'm working on.
I was going to say, just getting it going, just getting started.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's really valuable insight. Well, Alexis, I can't thank you enough for taking your time to come down and share.
You.
I'm really grateful. And I know you provide people out there a lot of really good inspiration
yeah.
and insight. You get two ins.
Yay.
And you're Kay the family. So whenever you got something going on, we would love to have you back.
Thank you.
If we're going to do a major mobile gallery throwdown.
Oh,
we would love to have you and
sure.
help out in any way. So,
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Oh, reach over to the mic here.
Yeah. Cool.